Tax Update for May 18, 2007. This is the Tax Update for May 18, 2007. This week, Payment Encore, Liability of Taxpayer for Embezzlement by His Payroll Service. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners expect to do their own researching for matters raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and document may be reproduced freely as long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file podcast. Such prohibited use would include using the podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. Limeburg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Again, visit them on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. This week, we're going to look at a case that really didn't break any new ground, but which actually gives us an insight into some of the obligations that taxpayers cannot delegate to others and some of the potential issues you should be considering when your client is considering outsourcing certain functions like depositing a payroll taxes to a third party. This week's case is the case of Pediatric Affiliates versus United States, a case that was recently upheld on appeal by the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. We're going to consider the case today, take a look at the fact pattern involved, which is a rather sad story for the taxpayers in question. And we're going to take a look at that and understand what we need to consider for our own clients and how we need to handle these matters. Now, this particular case deals with a client who entrusted the deposit of payroll taxes to an outside payroll service. Well, it turns out that unfortunately the payroll service, while taking the taxes from the taxpayer, wasn't actually forwarding those taxes onto the IRS, but rather was embezzling them. And the key question to be answered in this case is, once this is uncovered and we discover what's happened, does the taxpayer still owe the taxes back to the IRS, or did the taxpayer act reasonably, and is it now the government's obligation to go after the embezzler who has their money, shall we say, and that the government only recourses go that direction because the taxpayer took the steps the taxpayer reasonably should have been expected to undertake to ensure their liability was paid? Now, unfortunately for our clients, the answer to that question is going to be no. The government's not limited to just going after the embezzler, but rather has primary recourse still against the entity that withheld the payroll taxes. Now let's take a look at the basic facts of the case outlined in the 2006 District Court opinion that came down the Pediatric Affiliates case. Prior to 1998, according to the court documents, Pediatric Affiliates had used a payroll service to compute their payroll, but they had gone ahead and made the payroll tax deposits themselves down at the bank. That was back in the days when you wrote your check and you took the little coupon down to the bank with you and you deposited your payroll taxes. Now, as we all know today, or at least most of us do with payroll taxes any way, shape, or form know today, any longer, except for the very smallest clients, you're not allowed to make your deposits via the bank route. Now you have to transmit those funds electronically to the government via the Electronic Federal Tax Payment System, EFTPS. And you can do that either by establishing your own account with EFTPS and using one of the transfer entities, or going ahead and letting a third party establish it on your behalf. Now, for many clients, when these rules came down, these were unusual and difficult. Clients don't really like changes in their payroll departments. They don't really like changes to the procedure, and this was a forced change. So we had clients who may not have been terribly comfortable dealing with electronic issues, especially back in the day, because we're talking about 10 years ago when this came down. And the client may have decided, oh, this looks complicated, this looks messy, I don't know what's happening, we have significant payroll tax liabilities, and I know the penalties are nasty if you don't pay them properly. So we're going to go ahead and outsource this, because our payroll service is telling us, hey guys, why don't you just drop all this, let us make the deposits for you. We can set it up, we can handle all the electronics, we can take all of this off your hands, you don't have to worry about it, it'll just be done. So like many clients faced with the issue back then, they decided, well, yeah, that's a good reason now to get fully on board with the payroll service. And Pediatric Affiliates did that. As the court notes, Pediatric asserted that around 1998, the IRS changed its payroll tax regulations to require businesses to electronically transfer their tax payments to a depository service or independent payroll tax services. Then the service would remit the tax payments to the IRS. Pediatrics retained PAL, which is an entity owned by a Mr. Hirsch, and they basically engaged them to pay their payroll taxes from this point forward. Now, unfortunately, it turns out that Pediatric affiliates had managed to pick a rather bad apple in Mr. Hirsch. Mr. Hirsch embezzled the tax payments that Pediatrics and other clients transferred to his company. Now, what he'd do, like many embezzlers in a case like this, he obviously has to cover up his case, but since he's in control of most of the documents at this point and control of what the client sees, he can handle most of this and cover most of it up, at least initially. So he would prepare and send a Pediatric a tax form that reflected the real tax liability. Well, you know, they're going to compare it. So I sent stuff in. My checks indicate there's this much been withheld. Mr. Hirsch sends me back a notice stating I need to have this much for payroll taxes put in. I, as somebody who maybe can do the basic math, I take a look. I see, oh, yeah, that appears right. There it is. Double the FICA, double the Medicare, add the federal withholding tax. That's the amount he says I owe to the IRS. Hey, he's correct. So we transfer those funds to him. Mr. Hirsch, though, would also prepare a tax form that would reflect an understated liability and transmit those funds to the IRS. So basically, we would transfer to him $10,000. Mr. Hirsch then would turn around, prepare a reduced form for reporting to the IRS, transfer to the IRS, let's say $5,000, and keep $5,000. This scheme would work for quite a period because essentially we're not going to have any cross-check or any issue about the IRS back-checking to make sure that things work until we get to the W-2s at the end. We can prepare 941s now that reflect the lower liability. We have the payroll tax deposits that reflect out properly. And you might assume that his belief was, as long as I get my money in by the end of December and I can have a big December, big fourth quarter 941, everything's going to work. Because the employees probably would notice if their W-2s were substantially understated in terms of taxes withheld out of them. And they probably would even would notice if their wages appeared to be a lot lower than they thought they should be and raise questions. But you know, we'll fix all this up. Everything will be fine by the end of the year. Or perhaps Mr. Hirsch never even thought this far ahead, so maybe we never even got there. But for whatever reason, the IRS did eventually notice that things weren't working. Well, when that happens, of course, one of the negatives is that we're all used to the fact that we get IRS notices that are incorrect. They're not known to have 100% batting average and being on all the time when they issue a notice and say a client owes money to the IRS. In fact, many of us might come to the conclusion from the notices that we see, because quite often we're seeing the notices that are, shall we say, don't have the math errors, don't have all the problems. We're seeing notices more often that would reflect issues internally with the IRS not quite getting things right, that probably most CPAs would seem to believe, oh, they get it wrong all the time. Probably the reality falls somewhere in the middle, because I suspect the vast majority of IRS notices are actually correct. The issue being that taxpayers make tons of oddball and odd errors, and it's not really easy to notice that we've got something here that really is the IRS's issue when it comes out of the computer. It's tougher to catch those. We notice them because those are the ones we're going to get. But in any event, Pediatric affiliates got a notice from the IRS in 2002 that underpaid its taxes in 1999 and 2000. Now, when faced with that notice, Pediatric did the obvious thing. It's the first thing any of us would do. Pediatric went and took a look at, okay, what does my withholding tax, what does my record show as having been transferred? So they reviewed their withdrawal records. They found there was no discrepancy. They showed the amount withdrawn. They showed the liabilities. They added up to their W-2s. Everything was fine. The IRS is just crazy. This, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. So send them back that, probably send them back a little notice telling them they didn't know what they were talking about. Here are the payments we made. These are the correct payments. We know that. We've got documentation of these payments, and your records must be in error, and please correct them. However, this time that letter didn't solve everything. The IRS sent second and third notices of delinquency. Again, they checked their records, found no discrepancy. And it's like, will these guys ever figure out, you know, that they misapplied the payments to that we gave them, and they should stop sending us these notices? Well, the IRS finally sent Pediatrics documents that reflected the discrepancy that was not apparent based on the information they had been given by PAL. So now suddenly it becomes apparent, wait, things aren't working. Pediatric then contacts Mr. Hirsch and says, and was told that in fact, oh, well, at this point he comes clean and says, oh yeah, he took the money. He misappropriated the funds. So the money never really went to the IRS. Oops. Now we have a problem. Now, Mr. Hirsch initially faced a number of legal problems. The United States brought criminal charges against him in the District Court for the Southern District of New York in December of 2004. He's charged with wire fraud and tax evasion. The indictment alleged that he converted over $2.3 million of over 50 clients' funds and filed 160 false and fraudulent tax forms. Mr. Hirsch pled guilty to both counts, was assessed monetary penalties, and was sentenced to serve 37 months in prison. Now, independently, Pediatric brought an action in the District of New Jersey against PAL and Hirsch on July 22, 2002, shortly after they discovered the problem. Now, they asserted claims for fraud, violation of RICO, and sought monetary damages. Default judgment was entered in their favor in the amount of $1.2 million. Well, you do the quick math there, and it becomes clear that Pediatric was a significant victim, shall we say, of Mr. Hirsch, that Mr. Hirsch's, shall we say, hedge fund playing came pretty heavily at Pediatric's expense. Now, while they got that judgment, it wasn't going to do them much good, because in a footnote, the court notes that Samuel Hirsch, and he uses the name Samuel in addition, so you'll find two names referred to him in this document, the action was stayed and administratively terminated because he filed for bankruptcy protection. So basically, at the end of the day, it turns out Mr. Hirsch, not surprisingly, is uncollectible. So Pediatric's out, or somebody's out. Now the question is, who's out the missing payroll taxes? Who's got the $1.2 million problem? Is it the IRS or is it Pediatric? Now, the district court had a quick outline of the parties' positions, and we'll kind of summarize them here. The IRS position was that, look, the taxes are owed to us, and that Pediatric's case should be thrown out because they owe the taxes as a matter of law, and the interest they owe is on the taxes because the deficiency is not attributable to an error or delay of the IRS. So basically, to the IRS position, they clearly owe the taxes, and basically they owe the interest. There's no issue to be decided here. Now, Pediatric argues it's not responsible for the tax or interest because, under its position, it paid the taxes owed to PAL's payroll services. It's not responsible for Mr. Hirsch's subsequent embezzlement of the funds, and the United States should be judicially estopped from recovering the taxes from Pediatric. Pediatric goes on to say the government's recovery in this matter was the conviction and incarceration of Mr. Hirsch for tax evasion. To enforce Pediatric's liability in addition to incarcerating Hirsch would amount to a double recovery for the United States. Now, the court went on to consider these issues, and in the end, they're going to find 100% for the government. Now, Pediatrics point out, hey, wait, we've already paid these taxes. I mean, the money was taken out of the employees' checks. It was sent to Mr. Hirsch along with our liability for the FICA, etc. And as far as we knew, he'd paid it to the IRS. We had done everything reasonable. We had taken care of it. The fault for all this disappearing is not ours. Now, the district court outlined the criteria the Pediatric is going to have to make, because clearly the taxes weren't paid. Nobody disputes that either. There was no tax ever received by the IRS, so nobody's disputing the money didn't go there. Now, to be excused for failure to timely pay payroll taxes owed, a taxpayer must show the failure did not result from willful neglect and was due to reasonable cause. Now, the court, nobody is asserting in this case that, in fact, there was going to be willful neglect on behalf of Pediatric affiliates. So what we're going to have to ask is there reasonable cause for the failure to pay the taxes due to the fact that there was an embezzler in the mix that nobody was aware was, you know, basically not sending the funds on? Was that reasonable cause under the law? Now, pediatric had clearly delegated. You know, the general rule is that a employer is responsible for ensuring that payroll taxes are timely and properly deposited, just as we are all responsible for our individual tax returns to assure that our taxes are essentially, you know, that we get our tax returns filed and we send the check in when we owe the money. We have those responsibilities. Now, the question becomes, if we delegate part of that to a third party, do we escape responsibility if the third party fails to perform or even performs what would basically be criminally against us and performs a fraud on us? And the court turned initially to the Supreme Court's analysis in Boyle to deal with the issue about what is a reasonable reliance on a third party and whether you can use reasonable reliance on a third party for certain actions. The Supreme Court established a bright line rule that reliance on the agent is not reasonable cause and does not excuse a taxpayer's failure to timely file a tax return. It notes that in Boyle, the taxpayer had relied on an attorney to prepare and file a return on behalf of an estate for which the taxpayer was the executor. Holding that reliance on an attorney does not excuse late filing, the Supreme Court emphasized that Congress has placed the burden on the taxpayer to ensure the timely filing of return. Reliance is not a substitute for compliance with the tax statutes. The court note that the situation may differ if a taxpayer relies on the erroneous advice of counsel with respect to a question of law, but no special training or effort is needed to determine a tax deadline and make sure the deadline is met. Therefore, similarly to the requirement to file the return on time, the court is going to hold the requirement to make the payments timely and get these things in place is an obligation that is not delegable. The court looks at the specific issue of payroll service and provides the following specific analysis. A payroll service, while not an employee of a company like a bookkeeper or manager, is a third-party agent of the company. The code does allow an employer to delegate agents to act on behalf of the employer to perform duties such as payments of employee wages and company payroll taxes. However, the court goes on to note that if you do provide that a third party is allowed to basically take care of your payment obligations, you have an authorization for a reporting agent, that authorization has the following line. I understand this agreement does not relieve me as taxpayer of the responsibility to ensure that all tax returns are filed and all deposits and payments are made. That last line may strike more than a few clients as unfair because I'm sure they signed that form on the form 8655. Just because it was slid across the table by the payroll service who says, well, you've got to sign this in order for us to process and pay the taxes and file the forms and do this work. And it's one of those just sign the forms. Well, gang, this paperwork is important. Quite honest, quite often we dismiss it or ignore it or say it's just paperwork. But in this case, it's obviously going to come back to haunt pediatric affiliates because the responsibility was still there. And now, as the court will point out, you were even informed when the IRS allowed delegation that you were informed in this notice that you couldn't get rid of that responsibility. But the question becomes, does an embezzlement change everything? While it may seem reasonable to presume that even if there's a general requirement to assure those taxes are paid and returns are filed, that is, you know, if you stop paying the payroll service, the mere fact you sign that form doesn't mean, oh, I don't have to worry about filing the taxes because I signed authorization, I haven't revoked it. In this case, but shouldn't embezzlement be a different rule? I mean, why should embezzlement count the same way? And in fact, the court says, no, in fact, this does not change. In fact, there's almost an identical case involved when it points out the case presents almost identical facts of those found in Huffman, Carter, and Hunt, a case where a payroll service embezzled the tax payments. It considered the case along with the case of Classic Printing, where an employee embezzled the payments, and the court notes, in both cases, the taxpaying agent embezzled money from the taxpayer. Despite the criminal nature of the agent's conduct, the plaintiffs failed to pay their taxes was not excused. The taxpayers were responsible for overseeing the acts of their agents and bore ultimate responsibility and control over their tax obligations. Recognizing that although reliance on trust employee was understandable and the betrayal was sad and unfortunate, the company was not prevented from fulfilling its tax obligations because managerial control of the company did not rest with the employee. Now, interestingly enough, the court did hold and analyzed a case where it had been held that where, in essence, the senior officers of the corporation were involved in the embezzlement, that at that point, that corporation was excused from the late payment of taxes. But in that case, it noted that in essence, the nature of the fraud against the company was such that the entity had no way of basically getting out of it, was prevented. But as the court points out, in this case, Mr. Hirsch was not a manager. He was not ultimately in control. He was not somebody at the very, very top level of management who could have basically co-opted the entire organization, entire operation. Rather, in this case, he was simply a person they had hired. And as such, while it's regrettable that he took the money, the fact is the negative consequences of the fact he didn't pay them are going to fall back on the company because they were the ones that basically chose him and selected him. It notes, pediatric situation is analogous to the plaintiffs in Huffman, relied on the outside payroll service, assuming, as the court did in Huffman, that pediatric exercised prudence in selecting and monitoring Hirsch, pediatric still bears the ultimate responsibility to ensure taxes are properly paid. Reliance on Hirsch did not render pediatrics unable to fulfill its tax obligations. In essence, this is a responsibility that cannot be delegated. Pediatrics could not get rid of it regardless. But pediatrics said, wait, the IRS already had a remedy. They had a remedy against Mr. Hirsch, and they shouldn't be allowed to use it twice. They note that the IRS charged, or the government charged Mr. Hirsch, with unlawfully, willingly, and knowingly did attempt to evade and defeat a substantial part of the federal payroll taxes due and owing by the corporate clients of PAL Data in its criminal charges against him. And now they're going to turn around, they've convicted him of that, and they're still not going to turn around and try and take the money from pediatric affiliates. After all, if Mr. Hirsch had evaded the taxes, it seems like he's the one that owes the government. However, the court held the U.S. position in the criminal case was not clearly inconsistent with his position in this case, and thus the doctrine of judicial estoppel did not apply. The court notes that liability for tax evasion is not limited to the taxpayer. Any person who willfully attempts to evade or defeat a tax obligation can be penalized under Section 7201 of the United States Code. Therefore, it's not contradictory for the government to seek to criminally penalize Hirsch for evasion of payroll taxes, including those of pediatric, and to be paid the taxes as owed by pediatric. The court then goes on to make a statement that I think kind of rubs salt in the wound for the shareholders of pediatrics, but is probably correct, at least from a legal standpoint. Pediatric argues that it will suffer a detriment because it will be obligated to pay its payroll taxes twice. This argument, however, is incorrect. Pediatric paid money to Hirsch to cover its tax liability, but due to Hirsch's embezzlement, Pediatric did not appropriately pay the IRS in full. Pediatric is not being forced to pay its taxes twice because the taxes the IRS seeks to collect now were not paid. And probably to put that in perspective, it doesn't seem quite as harsh and unfair. It would be similar to as if a client of one of our clients had turned around and gave, let's say, the payment for his bill. He's going to pay us $1,200 on a bill. And he gives that payment, that $1,200, to his son and tells his son, you go ahead and you make sure this check gets to the accounting firm. Now, instead of taking the check to the accounting firm, the son basically modifies, forges, changes the check, changes the title, changes everything on it, takes the $1,200 and pockets it himself because he's able to cash it for his own use. Now, would it be okay to hold us as the accounting firm responsible or say, oh, we've got to go after the son because he had your money? Or is it more that we get to go after the client? Obviously, we get to go after the client. The same issue, unfortunately, exists here. But finally, they tried to say, wait, but on appeals, we had an appellate officer give us advice of saying, oh, no, there was no way the government could hold you liable for it since obviously it was stolen. And therefore, don't worry about this. There won't be any tax due. And they're saying because of that, the government should be basically barred from collecting because we relied on that to our detriment, at least arguably somewhat of our detriment, because had we paid the taxes, we'd have at least have stopped the interest and penalties from continuing to accrue. Had we paid it earlier rather than believing what the appeals officer told us, that we weren't going to end up owing it in the end. However, the court didn't exactly buy this. Here's what Pediatric contends. The appeals officer said he could not see how it could be determined Pediatric owed the money to the IRS. Pediatric, number two, should not be held responsible for the money if it was stolen. And number three, either Pediatric owed the money or it did not, and he would check with others in the appeals office and then advise. Well, the court didn't buy that. They said even assuming the statements were a misrepresentation, Pediatric's reliance on them was not reasonable. The alleged statements are not documented in writing. The statements were made in the context of a collection due process hearing. The discussions in a collection due process hearings were preliminary and non-final in nature because the final outcome could not be documented in a written determination that could be appealed to an appropriate court. As Pediatric alleges, the appeals officer said he would check with others and advise. Even accepting as true the factual allegations in the complaints, the statement of the appeals officer are mere erroneous advice, not affirmative misconduct. In the absence of reliance, detriment, and affirmative misconduct, applying equitable estoppel to the government in this action is not appropriate. The panel in the Third Circuit even more strongly rejected the theory, noting in addition to the above that, moreover, appellant was represented by counsel and therefore its failure to decipher the tax code cannot be excused by its reliance on government employees' error. In essence, the taxpayer's advisor should have said, guys, okay, the appellate conferee just told you that you're not going to owe this tax. He didn't see how it could be charged to you. But I'm going to tell you that, in fact, reality is under the law. You take a look at the law. You owe this money. You almost certainly are going to be charged for it. And you can't rely on his statement. If you want to stop the interest and penalties, we still need to make the deposit. Now, what does this all mean? Well, does this case mean the taxpayer should never use a payroll service? No, it's not the lesson. Just as it's not the lesson that taxpayers should never have their third-party advisor, their accountant, or their attorney file for an extension on their behalf. But, similar to that, it does mean that the ultimate responsibility for assuring the actions takes place lies with the taxpayer. That means special care needs to be exercised in selecting a payroll service to handle those issues or any of these items that will be delegated. And you should consider if it appears you begin to get reason to believe things aren't happening, you better take quick action to determine if, in fact, there is a problem and take rapid action to try to correct such a problem rather than waiting on the problem to finally arise. Basically, the client still has a responsibility. If worse comes to worse, you can have the client say, if you really want to check this, you're paranoid about it, go ahead and, ask the IRS for a transcript of the transactions that have been made. See what has been deposited. Are the deposits being made in a timely fashion? You may wish to counsel clients, to be very, very careful of watching this. Also, be careful about being solicited by a payroll service that claims they can do it much cheaper than your current service, but you've never heard of the service. You're not sure who's there. These frauds have come up, and we've seen clients get taken. Finally, if you begin to wonder that your payroll service is financially in trouble, you may wish to be concerned about whether the taxes have been properly paid. This is an issue the client cannot dodge. Now, you may hear some work going on outside today. Unfortunately, I apologize for that in the background. We have some landscaping work going on that they are now running the machinery out there, so hopefully that's not too distracting in the background. But this has been the tax update for May the 18th, 2007. Tax update is sponsored by Limeburg Information Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. You can visit them for information of interest to tax professionals and take a look both at this podcast and the other podcasts they've offered recently on matters of interest for tax professionals and other financial professionals. This has been the Tax Update Podcast.